Not too much. Okay, this is the 27th of March, and this is Bio 160, and we're finishing up with blood, and we're talking basketball. But I've just been so busy this year, I haven't really paid much attention to basketball, but maybe this weekend. The finals are Friday. Yeah, they're coming up. Okay, so that's interesting. I'll probably catch some over break. Yeah, so you're recording? That's fine. And we have a recorder here as well. Okay, let's see. So we're talking blood. Let's remember what the heck we were talking about. Blood. Blood clotting. What's another name for blood clotting? Coagulation. And if you're going to remember one thing about coagulation, well, it's a multi-step process, but what's the end point of all those different processes? Some molecule is formed when blood clots. What's that molecule called when it forms that? Is that on the screen? Yeah, it's on the screen. It just forms that network of protein fibers. It's called fibrin, right? It's called fibrin. So fibrin formation is really the same thing as coagulation or blood clotting. Okay. And then that's going to stop that blood vessel from bleeding. And that's good for even big tears, large tears in a blood vessel. Fibrin formation. Now, don't forget that fibrin formation, right, is this whole long and involved process. So there's an enzyme called thrombin that takes fibrinogen, which is an inactive form of fibrin, and converts it into that active form. Now, what can you tell me about, what's interesting about the first step in fibrin formation or in blood clotting right here? The interesting thing to me when I look at it is that it involves this little compound right there. What's that little thing? Calcium. Right. So in order to have good blood clotting function, you need to have what? Good levels of calcium in your blood. And if you don't have good levels of calcium in your blood, then you're going to have blood clotting disorders or decreased clotting function. And how dangerous is that? Well, yeah, it's real dangerous because you could bleed to death with just a very little kind of cut. Okay. So pay attention to that little molecule right there. Especially, I'm sure there's a question in your student study guide. So don't forget, on Thursday, you got a quiz at the end of class on blood. It's not going to be on the cardiovascular system, but it's going to be on blood. And we'll be done with blood well before then. Okay, so start working on so there's that calcium again, necessary for blood clotting. Now, what tissue? This is still a review. What tissue is responsible for making blood? What tissue actually makes red blood cells? We looked at this last time. What tissue in your body actually makes red blood cells? You'd go immediately down over here to red bone marrow. Right? So red bone marrow produces these red blood cells. And red bone marrow is going to be stimulated into making red blood cells when there's a level of erythropoietin. That's a hormone in your blood. So erythropoietin goes to red bone marrow that stimulates red blood cell production. All right. So also then, how long does a red blood cell last? Yeah, only 120 days because it doesn't have a nucleus, it doesn't have organelles. These guys right here, it's loaded with hemoglobin. So they have a very short lifespan. As a matter of fact, how many do you lose every second? Big number, yeah, a couple million, right? So this red bone marrow is very busy making about 2.5 million every second just to replace those that die in your body. So that's how important that erythropoietin is, and that erythropoietin comes from the liver as well as the kidney because it can sense oxygen in the blood. And when oxygen starts to decrease because you don't have enough red blood cells, the kidney and liver secrete erythropoietin, which go to red bone marrow, stimulates the production of red blood cells, your oxygen goes back up in the blood, and then that decreases, right, the erythropoietin release from the liver and the kidney right here. So it's a nice negative feedback mechanism. All right, so we said that you lose about 2.5 million red blood cells every second. What happens to all those pieces that red blood cell is made up of? All right, so here you have a red blood cell, and the compound inside of a red blood cell that carries oxygen, can anybody remember the name of that compound that's inside of a red blood cell that carries oxygen everywhere in your body? Yeah, hemoglobin is it. Hemoglobin is the name of that compound. All right, so here, when a red blood cell is broken down by this macrophage, because it's too old, after about 120 days, it stops to function, it releases hemoglobin. Can you see hemoglobin right there? Yeah, it's a little dark, but I can see it. Hemoglobin, that's inside a red blood cell. Hemoglobin is then broken down into something we call globin and heme. Globin is a protein. Who can remember what the building blocks of a protein are? Amino acids. So your body then takes this globin, breaks it down into amino acids, and then what can your body do with those amino acids again? Build more protein, any kind of protein it wants, maybe a globin to put in hemoglobin, but it could make a protein to put in a muscle or your skin or wherever. All right. Now this heme is a little bit different. It's not a protein. It's a funny kind of compound. It gets broken down. Remember, there's an iron molecule in there. It gets broken down to iron, which is, what's a chemical symbol for iron? Fe. It gets broken down into Fe. And that Fe can be reincorporated back into hemoglobin again. It can be recycled. But this heme can't really. It's hard to metabolize. But your liver takes heme, converts it into biliverdin, and then it converts it into bilirubin, and then it's secreted via the bile system, which we haven't talked about yet. When we get to the digestive system, you'll learn a little bit about bile. That bilirubin gets secreted into your intestine, and then you excrete it from your body with the feces. All right? So that's where that heme goes. The heme basically just gets passed out of your body, excreted through the feces. Now, I think when we talked about the integument, we talked about this compound right here, bilirubin, before. What is that tell me something about bilirubin that we talked about before. Does that ring any bells to anybody? Bilirubin? How about the color? The color, you know what? It's a bright yellow color. So if it builds up in the body, you get what we call jaundice. The whites of your eyes turn bright yellow, right? Your nails turn yellow, your skin turns yellow, right? So that could be due to maybe a hemolytic disease of your red blood cells, or maybe it could be due to some problem with your liver as well. It will produce jaundice because bilirubin isn't being processed properly. Okay, so don't forget, hemoglobin broken down to globin and heme, and then the heme is broken down to iron and basically this bilirubin or biliverdin, the bili products, which is bright yellow, and that produces jaundice. All right, so that's kind of a review of what we covered last time. And I think I said that the last thing that we got to cover has to do not with coagulation, okay, but a different kind of process. And that other kind of process, see if I have slide number 7. I don't think I'm jipping you out of anything. Yeah, I covered everything with coagulation. Another kind of process has to do with a transfusion reaction, where blood starts clumping together during a transfusion reaction. So if you get transfused with somebody's blood and it isn't matched up properly, it can start to form these plugs. Sort of like coagulation, but a little bit differently. But nonetheless, it's going to form these plugs all over your body. Then what happens? Your blood doesn't flow and that's it, right? You'll die from a transfusion reaction. So it can be very dangerous. So we got to be very knowledgeable about transfusion reactions and things that might produce that kind of thing from occurring. Okay. So a transfusion reaction is an interaction between antigens and antibodies. And when you get a combination of an antigen and an antibody, we call that agglutination. So there's a difference between coagulation and agglutination. So let's see if let's work this out a couple times. Let's just say it out loud so that it's straight in our minds. Coagulation is due to a bunch of reactions that produce one kind of compound. And what's that one compound? Coagulation produces, what does it produce? Everybody's got to tell me before we can go home tonight. Fibrin, right? Coagulation produces fibrin, which is that net that stops bleeding. All right? That's coagulation. Let me put it down right here. Coagulation, because these words almost sound similar. Coagulation, that's stopping blood loss, right? Due to what? Fibrin formation. But a transfusion reaction is what we call what? Agglutination, not coagulation, agglutination, and that's due to what? An antigen-antibody reaction. It's a different kind of thing altogether. It has nothing to do with fibrin. You see that? Okay. So now where do you have antigens and where do you have antibodies? Well, you have red blood cells, and on the surface of those red blood cells, they have antigens. They're just molecules that have a certain shape sticking off of the cells. And it identifies that cell as belonging to your body. And there's a certain class of those antigens that we call, that belong to what we call the ABO system. So if you want to think about those antigens for the ABO system, here we have, what does that look like? Circle. That's a red blood cell. Okay, let's just say that's a red blood cell. And on the plasma membrane, here's a plasma membrane of that red blood cell, there's an antigen. So sticking off of that red blood cell is an antigen. Guess what antigen that is? That's an A antigen. Okay? And this particular cell might actually have another antigen. Guess what that's called? That's the B antigen. So though in terms of the ABO system, these are the two kinds of antigens this red blood cell can have. It can either have an A antigen or a B antigen. And the B, you know, we could stick another B antigen right off over there. It's not that they have the structure or the shape of an A and a B. It's just, this is just our way of talking about it. Okay? And probably the first one they found, they called what? The first, yeah, they probably called A. And they were messing around with that, and then some researchers found another antigen. So guess what you call that one? B, right? So just on kind of down the line like that. Right? So these belong to the ABO system. All right, now, what's the second component of an antigen-antibody reaction? You need not only antigens, you need to have antibodies. Now, an antibody, you find, so these are antigens, antigens right here, we're on the cell membrane. That's where you find antigens. Antibodies, on the other hand, we don't find on the cell membrane. Antibody, I got to spell this correctly. Antibodies. And this is what they look like. I'm not going to draw it to scale because you wouldn't see it. It's a relatively small molecule, but this is what an antibody looks like. Just like this. Almost looks like a little guy with two arms and two hands. Okay, so that's an antibody, and with those hands, it can grab stuff. And if this were, and let me just draw this this spot right here. Here is an antibody. Let's say that it looks like this. And I'm going to ask you what kind of antibody that is. Let me draw another antibody. Antibodies, where are they found? Let me stop and say what they're found in the plasma. They're not bound to cell membranes. They're in the plasma. Here's another antibody. Or do you believe me? Does this look like an antibody to you? Yeah, because It has these two arms and two hands for grabbing something. But now let me change the shape of these hands that can bind something. Like that. So do you agree that this shape is different than that shape right there? Okay. Now, if you were going to name this antibody right over here and use the same system that we have right here, either an A or a B, what would you call this one?
A.
B, because those Bs can fit right in the active site right over here. So this is what we would call a B antibody. And this one over here, we would call what? An A antibody. Because these A's, right, an A can fit right in here, and an A can fit right in here, but what would fit in here? A B. It's not that antigens and antibodies have that shape, I'm just using that to tell you that they have a specific shape and that it does match up in that nice complementary nature just like that. All right, so can an A antibody bind this B antigen? No, it doesn't have the right shape, right? And the B antibody can't bind the A antigen either because, again, it just doesn't have the right shape. So antibody antigen binding is performed by this lock and key model, right? The shape of the antibody has to match the shape of the antigen in order for it to bind just right. All right, so I'm going to erase these guys. So what am I erasing right now? Ooh, this is a good test. What am I erasing right here?
The antigen.
The antigen. That's right. And I'm leaving the antibodies. A lot of times when we talk about antibodies, we don't say A antibody. Sometimes we just say anti-A. Anti-A means what? A antibody. That's just a short way of saying A antibody. Okay, so in every case, every particular case, where do you find antigens? On the cell membrane. They're always going to be on the cell membrane that identifies that particular cell. And antibodies you're going to find where? Always in the plasma. And that's what we got symbolized on this little cheat sheet right here. The red blood cell surface contains antigens, and these little wavy lines right here represent plasma, just fluid. The plasma contains the antibodies. And these antibodies can bind these antigens if it's the right shape, right? If it's anti-A, it can bind the A antigen. Okay. That clumping together we call agglutination. So how can this happen? Well, let me erase this cell right here and draw another cell, and just let me make this an A right over here, and let's put another cell with an A on it. And again, what are these things? These are antigens, right? These are antigens. And now let's put this little antibody in here with an arm on it, and it can bind this one, and it can bind this one, right, like this, right? So here's the antibody. With one hand, it can grab one cell, and with the other hand, what can it do? It can grab another cell. And then what happens? We could put in another antibody like this with another cell on it, with another A right here. And what can happen? It can grab this cell, and it can grab another cell. And if you have enough antibodies right here, what can happen to all these red blood cells? They get all stuck together. They all get clumped together. And that process of clumping all of these cells together with this antibody-antigen reaction, we call that what? Agglutination. And I'm not sure that there's a picture in your book of what agglutination looks like, but it kind of looks just like a big old nasty red crystal with all the red blood cells all just clumped together. Yeah, I don't have a picture of... Oh, wait. Aha! I do have it. Right here. Ah, look at that. I should use this slide more often. Okay, so here is what? A bunch of red blood cells all just clumped together because those antibodies got in there and it grabbed red blood cells and is just holding them all together. And you can see what here is an antibody right here grabbing onto the antigen on the surface of this red blood cell. And it grabs onto another one and another one and another one. And so what happens to your blood when it's all clumped together like that, when it forms, when these cells all form this like big crystal right here? Well, it stops flowing, right? It just turns into a rock and it stops flowing. And then what happens to the person? Oh, they're dead, right? So you got to be really careful about antigen-antibody reactions during a transfusion. So you have to be really careful. So how do we understand this ABO blood group system? All right, so I drew a cell. Let me just draw another cell right here. The way we call, and I would guess everybody has heard of the ABO blood group system, and as a matter of fact, you might even know what blood type you are. Does anybody know what blood type you are? What blood type are you? You're O. Okay, we'll get to O. You're B. You're A. Fantastic. So a lot of people know their blood group. What does that mean in terms, let's draw your blood type on the board. Okay, that's actually pretty easy to do. All right, so I'm going to draw some things on the board. For instance, we had a person, all right, they say they're blood type B. This is your red blood cell right here. What kind of antigens does it have? Okay, it only has the B antigen on your red blood cells. If you're blood type B, you have B antigens on your red blood cells. You don't have any A's. Yeah. Well, we're going to get to negative in a little bit. That's not an ABO system. That's the RH system. And if you want to learn about that, then I can talk about that in a little bit. And you'll see that with this knowledge, you can understand the plus and minus. Okay. Let me draw another person. Somebody else's blood. What blood type is this person? Yeah, because it has the A antigens on it. Right? Somebody said that they, I don't know if they said A. All right, let me draw another kind of red blood cell. Let me erase this antibody right over here. Here we have a red blood cell. What is the blood type of this person? What's the blood type of this person? What do you see? What kind of antigens do you see on the plasma membrane here? You see A and B, and this is allowed. This is a legal form of blood. I'm sure somebody has AB. Oh, I told you what it was. What blood type is this? This is type AB, because it has both the A antigens and the B antigens on the surface of this cell. And then we had somebody actually admit to us in class that they were type O. That's no big deal. What is type O? Here's a red blood cell. And type O is what? Neither B nor A. They don't have any of these antigens on the surface of their red blood cells. So somebody said, well, if they don't have any, we'll call it blood type 0. And then they thought, well, gee whiz, you got blood type A, blood type B. We can't have 0 because it doesn't make sense having letters and numbers together. Then somebody had a bright idea. Well, if we can't call it 0, let's call it what? O. Or maybe they went, oh, I know what to call it. Okay, instead of 0, we'll call it O. All right, so blood type O has no antigens on the surface of the red blood cell. Here's a B type blood, here's an A type blood, and then here's a B type. And that's all the types that you could possibly be. Okay? So that's what we know about the ABO system in terms of antigens. Now let's work antibodies into this. Can somebody that has blood type, which one you want to check? B. Can somebody with blood type B, can they have B antibodies? Can this person have anti-B? What would happen? Their blood would, what would we call that? What do we call this process right here? Agglutination. So if this person had anti-B in their blood, That's what would happen to him. So this can't happen naturally, right? So this person can't have anti-B, but they have antibody. Antibody. You probably know this now, even without reading the chapter. This person has antibody A. Because this antibody can't react with this cell right here, so they're fine. Unless they get a transfusion of what? Somebody that has A antigens on their surface, and then they're going to end up looking like that. All right, so that happens automatically. What about this person right here? They produce antibodies all the time, but can they produce antibody A? No way, because then they'll have agglutination taking place. So this person produces antibody B because of that. Now, here's a cool condition. What about this person here? Can they produce antibody A? No, because there's this A antigen here. Can this person produce antibody B? No, because again, they would produce agglutination. So this person right here has what? No antibodies. No antibodies. And then our last case, somebody with blood type O, could this person make an antibody A? Yeah, because it's not going to react. What about antibody B? Yeah. So this person has what? Both. And can I abbreviate it or should I spell it out long? Let me try abbreviating it first. Both anti-A and anti-B. Right? Which means what? Antibody A and antibody B. So on the test, I'll probably give you a cell with antigens on it and ask you what blood type it is. Okay, but I mean, is it pretty easy? It's real. I think it's easy to see that. All right, and then you can't have the same antibody as you have antigens, right? So on the test, I could ask you, well, what kind of antibodies are in this person's blood? Right, and you would say, oh, well, I know, I don't want to create this agglutination. Then I know it has the corresponding antibody. And then on your slide, your handout that I gave you, okay, if you can't picture that all in your mind at one time, you can actually generate this table. I'm sure this table is in your book. Right here, the ABO blood group system. Should we draw this table out real quick on the board? Let's see if I can do it. I'm going to erase this. Ready? Okay. All right, so erase that. Erase this. I'll just erase all this stuff. All right, so let's start making that table. What do we got? We've got one row is going to be what? Antigens. Another row is going to be antibodies. Right here. And then across the top of this table, let's put a blood type. So what do you want to start with? A or O? What do you want to start with? A? Okay. So you got blood type A. And then let's be a little logical. Then we'll do B. And then we'll do blood type AB. And then are we done? What's another blood type? O. Yeah, I forgot O. All right, so we'll just make a nice little table like so and like so. Okay, then we can fill it in. So somebody that has blood type A, what do they have for antigens? A antigens. And what about blood type B? B antigens. And for AB blood, you got A and B. And then for blood type O, you got what? None. Okay. Now, where do you find these antigens? The cell membrane or the plasma membrane? So let's just put plasma membrane right here. All right, plasma membrane. And then antibodies, where do you find antibodies? Not on the plasma membrane, but in the dissolved in the plasma floating around in the fluid. So here we're going to put plasma. All right, so a person with blood type A, are they going to have any antibodies at all? Yeah, they're going to have what? Not anti-A, because that would cause agglutination. I took off. This would be what? Anti-B. And blood type B will have anti-A. And then somebody that has AB will have, can't have any antibodies. So we'll put none. And then somebody that has blood type O, they will have what? Both. Yeah. Anti-A and what? Anti-B blood. And so today, you know, if you ever go into a hospital, there are a lot of people know their blood type. You go to a hospital, maybe you're in a car accident and you're worried and you say, oh, I need some blood right away, because maybe you're educated and you know you're a little hypotensive, you're losing blood, and you say, don't take time for a cross match. I know what blood type I am. I'm A such and such. Are they ever going to believe you? No way. Yeah, they will take some blood out, even if you only have a little bit left. They're going to take some more out, and they're going to do a cross match, and they're going to be absolutely positively sure they know exactly what blood type they are, you are, before they transfuse. Because what happens if you made a mistake and told them your child's blood type? Oh, they'll kill you really fast. And guess who's responsible? Right? The hospital's responsible, because they know that they should do a cross match before they ever transfuse any blood into you. So you can say, oh, I know my blood type, but will they be interested? They'll say, oh, well, thank you very much for that information. We're going to do a cross match on our own and make sure that everything matches up. But you know what? There's something else going on there, too, that's important. What we talked about right here, this ABO blood system, that's only one. That's maybe only one of five or six different systems that they're going to do a cross match on. They're going to do a bigger panel to find out what blood is even better for you in terms than just the ABO system right here. And someone asked, what else is there? Someone asked over here, what about this minus and plus thing? Okay, that's another antigen antibody system that we're all pretty familiar with. And what the heck is that about? All right, so that system has to do with this particular circumstance over here. There can be another antigen, and it's a lot different in shape and a lot different in form. It's an Rh antigen sticking off the plasma membrane. And it looks like that. And there can only be two cases. You can either have it or not have it. And they discovered this particular antigen in rhesus monkeys, and so they call it Rh. That's a species of the animal that they were looking at, rhesus monkey. All right, and you either have it or you don't have it. If you have the antigen, guess what the symbol they give that? Positive. And if you don't have it, negative. Okay, so somebody that's Rh negative is missing that antigen. It's neither here nor there in terms of your health or any other characteristic as far as we know. But if you do have it, it's plus. And it's important for transfusion reactions, because you don't want to give plus blood. This one over here. If you have it, okay, you can't have an antibody. But if you're Rh negative, you could develop antibodies for this. And if you ever get Rh positive blood, you'll have a transfusion reaction. Yeah. Okay, for instance, this is kind of interesting. You're talking about if you have a baby, right? Okay. Now, how does that work? Your book goes into it a little bit. It's fun to talk about it, and clinically it's very important. So I'll just say a little something about it, but it's not on the test. Okay, for instance, if the mom is, let's just say this is mom right here, and this is dad. So if dad is Rh positive and mom is Rh negative, and this is one of the reasons why you always had to get blood tests before you got married. I don't know when they stopped doing that, maybe 15, 20 years ago, something like that. But it always used to be you had to get a blood type before you got married, because they're concerned about this circumstance right here. All right, so this means that the mom could produce what? Anti-Rh. But she doesn't have to worry because she doesn't have the Rh antigen. But if she has a baby, it's a 50-50 chance that the baby will be Rh positive. All right, and then the baby's blood could stimulate the production of anti-Rh, and then the mom's anti-Rh will go across the placenta and kill the fetal red blood cells. Right, and of course that's really bad for the baby to have all those red blood cells being killed before it's born. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that happens, I had a slide, what happens to the baby when all their red blood cells are being destroyed? Well, they have a real hard time breathing when they're born, but the baby's red blood cells are being destroyed by the mom's anti-Rh factor, and the baby gets overloaded with bilirubin. Okay, and have you ever heard of a baby being born that's very yellow or jaundiced? Yeah, that's the result of this condition right here. And bilirubin is actually toxic to the nervous system. It's very neurotoxic. So we'd like to know this ahead of time and prevent it. And we can actually prevent the mother from, with certain kinds of shots that you were mentioning, to inhibit this production of anti-Rh so that if the fetus is Rh positive, this antibody doesn't go and kill the fetal red blood cells. Okay, that's called erythroblastosis fetalis because it can be fatal, or hemolytic disease of the newborn because the mom's antibodies will hemolyze all the baby's red blood cells before it's born. But that doesn't happen with the ABO system, only the Rh. Yeah, another question. You know what? Not before you get married, but if you're ever pregnant, they will check.
Well, the reason I ask that, I wonder if that doesn't happen in other countries.
I'm sure quite a bit.
Yeah, my son is adopted from another country. He was born, he was very jaundiced, very premature, and immediately it showed up.
Sure.
It was shocking sweat.
Yeah. That's one of the things that they look for. They look for a whole bunch of colors when you're born and a newborn baby, not just yellow, but also to see if you're cyanotic, if you're kind of blue. And that's not an antigen-antibody reaction. That just is a sign that you have a circulatory problem or that your lungs are not developed. Okay? Yeah, so that's potentially very important to know that. So, for instance, if I draw... Can I erase that table right there? Everybody kind of see how that was developed? Hopefully it's a little complicated, but not really too bad. How about if I draw a couple cells? And let's analyze what these cells are in terms of the blood type. And since I drew the Rh over there, let's include Rh. So let's start with a nice case, an easy case for me to see. What is the blood type of this individual right here? And I'm not done drawing, so you probably can't tell me yet what blood type this is. But, okay, I'll stop now. So what blood type is that? It's A positive, right? Because it has the Rh antigen as well as the A. All right, now how about the hardest case? What blood type is that? So this is A positive, I like that. What is this right here? As a matter of fact, yeah, you saw that, right? Because it doesn't have any ABO, any A or B antigens or the Rh. So this is O minus. Now what blood type would this be? Okay, I'm done. That's O positive. Okay, it's not that the Rh antigen looks like that, we're just symbolizing it to be. It has a certain shape that doesn't change from person to person, and that would be O positive. And then let's do this one here. And then let me just draw one more thing. What's the blood type of this person? AB positive. All right, so you see how that goes? So this would be AB positive. So dad would be AB positive, and mom would be, in this case, in terms of the ABO system and the Rh system together, O negative. That would be like this one here. Okay? So I think that's all I got to say about blood. How about it? make pretty good sense? Let's see if we can work on, I'm going to turn the projector off. Let's see if we can work on 1 to 2. We go to 2:30, right? 2:20, something like that? Okay. How about the study sheet for blood? Yeah, let's get this out of the way. What kind of tissue is blood? Connective tissue. Strange, but it's a fluid connective tissue. What are the two major divisions or compartments in blood? You got the plasma and formed elements. Plasma and formed elements. All right, plasma is the fluid part, and the formed elements are the cellular part, the cells inside blood. Okay, what component of blood contains clotting factors? Not agglutination factors, but clotting factors. That would be the
fibrin.
That would be the, yeah, the fibrin, fibrinogen, all that stuff, that's in plasma. Plasma. So what component of blood contains clotting factors? That would be plasma. Yeah. What is the major component of plasma?
Water.
Exactly right. Water makes up most of plasma. Then you got a little bit of clotting factors, but that's probably less than 1%. Now, here we go. Question number 3. What are formed elements? Formed elements are cells, right? All the different kinds of cells. And so don't forget, what are the cells? You got red blood cells and white blood cells, and then you also got those little tiny platelets in there as well. Those are all formed elements. What's another name for a red blood cell? Erythrocyte, meaning red. And what about a white blood cell? Yeah, leukocyte. Just think of leukocephalus, the bird. And then platelet. What's another name for a platelet? Thrombocyte, the thrombocyte. All right, functions. Now, what's a function of a red blood cell? It carries oxygen. And a white blood cell? It fights infection. Right, fights infection. And then the platelet. It keeps you from bleeding to death. So clotting function. It forms blood clots. Platelets form blood clots. Clotting function, yeah. Blood clotting. Okay, and when you think of clotting function, what molecule is produced? What's the molecule that forms a blood clot?
Fibrin.
Yeah, okay. That's not on your study guide, but that's a good question. Probably get to it later. Number 4, what molecule is responsible for transporting oxygen in the blood? Hemoglobin. Where is it located? Inside a, what kind of cell? Inside the erythrocyte, or red blood cell. Because hemoglobin kind of looks red when it's bound to oxygen. So hemoglobin is inside red blood cells. This is probably a really good question. What are the breakdown products of hemoglobin? You got heme and you got globin. Those are the breakdown products of hemoglobin. And then what are the breakdown products of heme? You got iron, and you've got, and you could say bilirubin or biliverdin, some bili something. Yeah. Let's see. Breakdown products of hemoglobin. You got heme, H-E-M-E, heme, and then globin.
So, iron.
Not in that step. Yeah, because I want you to appreciate that iron is really a part of heme. Sounds like a really funny name, heme. Okay, what are the breakdown products of globin? Globin is just a protein. So when you break a protein down, you get just amino acids. So amino acids are the breakdown products of globin. And then heme, when you break heme down, you get iron and bilirubin. So that kind of helps you answer the next question. What chemical produces jaundice? That's a bilirubin. It's very yellow colored.
Bright yellow. Yeah. What color are these chairs? Are they yellow? Yeah, you know, it will look just like that or like that ruler up there. Really bright yellow. Okay. How many red blood cells must the body produce every second? Yeah, about 2.5 million. A couple million. And where are red blood cells produced? Bone marrow. And in particular, you should probably say red bone marrow. Because there's another kind of bone marrow called yellow bone marrow. And it doesn't make red blood cells. It's just a storage form for fat. We can store fat in bones too. Okay, oh, here's one that's hard for me to remember. Name two vitamins and a mineral needed to make functional red blood cells with hemoglobin. Let's do the mineral first. Iron. Iron is the mineral. That's not easy. That's easy for me to remember. Iron in blood. You need iron to make hemoglobin. And the two vitamins. You need, let's see, cobalamin, which I think is vitamin B12. And then you need riboflavin, I think is the second vitamin. Is that folic acid? Oh, folic acid.
Yeah.
I like folic acid. Riboflavin? Maybe riboflavin and folic acid are the same somewhere along the line. Yeah, folic acid. B12 and folic acid. And then the mineral is iron. Okay, what's the measure of how many red blood cells make up whole blood? What do we call that measurement of the amount of red blood cells? That's called hematocrit. Yeah, hematocrit is the amount of red blood cells in whole blood. Okay, and then probably, it's not going to be on the test, but you should know how to calculate it, right? If you take whole blood and put it in a centrifuge, the amount of red blood cells at the bottom of the tube as a percentage of the whole tube is just the hematocrit. Oh, no. Burned it out. Huh? Yeah, it's really bad. Bad luck. Okay. Well, good thing I don't need it to finish off this part right here. Here's a good question. Name the hormone which stimulates red blood cell production. I'm on the bottom part of question number 6. What hormone is responsible? There are a couple organs in your body that can monitor oxygen concentration in your blood, and when you lose red blood cells, the oxygen concentration goes down, and it secretes this hormone into the blood. Yeah, erythropoietin, or you could call it EPO, but erythropoietin that comes from the liver and from the kidneys. So what organ secretes erythropoietin naturally? That's the liver and kidneys. And if your body isn't making erythropoietin, you can actually get a shot of it. Erythropoietin is called EPO.
So what organ?
Liver and kidneys.
EPO?
EPO is the kind that you would get from a shot. The one that's made naturally by your body is erythropoietin. And EPO is just a trade name for erythropoietin. So a pharmaceutical company can make erythropoietin, but they don't call it erythropoietin. They just call it EPO because who in their right mind wants to say erythropoietin all day long? Right? So they just say EPO for erythropoietin. Okay. What are the functions of white blood cells? They fight infection. They just fight infection. And then give me two names of white blood cells. The most common ones are neutrophils and lymphocytes. Don't forget about lymphocytes because we're going to talk about them later on in the class. Lymphocytes. They fight infection. Yeah, those are the ones that I would pick on during the test. Lymphocyte and neutrophil, the two that I like are lymphocyte or neutrophil. Neutrophil. Okay, neutrophil or lymphocyte. Can you see that way in the back? Good enough? All right.
Ooh, I like these questions a lot. What's another name for blood clotting? Coagulation. Blood clotting or coagulation? You guys have got that written down already. All right, so three steps in forming a blood clot. Oh, yay, yay. What are the three steps? Fibrin formation is the last one. Okay, then you have thrombin formation. That's the second one. Yeah, and then prothrombin activator formation, that's the first one. So we went backwards, but that's okay. The first one is prothrombin activator. Prothrombin activator formation. Okay, because remember, prothrombin is an inactive form. Prothrombin activator formation. So here's an activator that's going to take prothrombin, thrombin to thrombin. This is the second step, is thrombin formation. And then thrombin is used to take fibrinogen, that's inactive, that ogen, to fibrin. And that fibrin is going to make a blood clot. So you need prothrombin activator here, and you need thrombin here to make fibrin. And what does that fibrin look like? Like that big net that traps red blood cells and keeps you from bleeding to death when you damage a blood vessel. All right, got past that one. Name the molecule which forms a network of protein fibers which traps blood cells, fluid, and platelets. We already said. What was that? It forms the net. What is a fibrin? Yeah, fibrin. Fibrin makes that net. Okay, what prefix or what suffix is added to the name of a chemical to designate it as inactive or precursor? All right, the prefix is what? Pro, P-R-O, and the suffix is ogen, right? So prothrombin is before thrombin, and ogen is before fibrin, fibrinogen, inactive forms. And the nice thing about that is that your body does what? It makes all of this stuff and sticks it in your blood so that it can get activated very quickly. But if you had to make fibrin from amino acids, or prothrombin from amino acids, it would take 2 weeks to build it up to a good concentration. And you would have bled to death way before 2 weeks was up. Right? So it's a good thing they're there ready to go to work.
What do you say suffix?
The suffix is ogen. Ogen. Like fibrin ogen. Inactive. And then it becomes fibrin very quickly whenever you start to bleed, whenever you activate this clotting mechanism. Ogen is inactive. Pro means inactive too. Pro is inactive as well as ogen. So inactive is pro or ogen. I've never run into a case where ogen doesn't mean precursor and inactive. There's some words that start with pro that don't necessarily mean inactive, like protein has, you know, that, but that's just a little funny case. Okay, but if you see pro-hormone or pro-something, that means it's inactive. What mineral is necessary for normal blood clotting function? Oh, I love this question.
Can you skip 10?
Oh, I skipped 10? Maybe I don't like 10. Let's see. Why am I afraid of 10? What converts prothrombin to thrombin? Oh, I got it on the board already. Prothrombin to thrombin is what? Prothrombin activator. Prothrombin activator converts prothrombin to thrombin. Now, is prothrombin active or inactive?
Inactive.
Inactive because it's got that pro in front of it. Okay. All right. What converts fibrinogen to fibrin? That would be thrombin, right? And is fibrinogen active or inactive? It's inactive because of the ogen. And thrombin just activates fibrin. That's what saves your life when you're bleeding. But if you're not bleeding, do you want to have fibrin forming in your blood? You know what? No way, because that's just going to stop your blood from flowing all over your body. So that's why it's this very carefully controlled mechanism right here. You don't want fibrin forming if you're not bleeding. And you know what? That happens to somebody every once in a while. And it's a very scary situation in the hospital. They call that, They call that disseminated intravascular coagulopathy. And it's very, very difficult. Usually people die as a result of that, because you can't have blood clotting forming all over in your body unless you need it. It's usually a result, somebody might have a tumor and diabetes and heart problems and kidney problems altogether. It's just very difficult to treat. Okay, ready for the next one? What mineral is necessary for normal blood clotting function? Calcium. There's that calcium again. That's why it's so important to have good calcium in your diet and that you exercise. And so think now for a second, what's more important to you, do you think? To have big, strong bones that can withstand fractures because you need calcium to have nice, strong bones? Or do you need to have calcium in your blood so that when you get a paper cut, you don't bleed to death? What do you think is more important? Clotting function or strong bones? And sometimes when people have a poor diet, they don't have calcium, their body has to choose one or the other. Yeah, your body will always choose clotting function. And so you'll lose bones so that you don't bleed to death, right? So that's kind of the basic underlying principle of why people get osteoporosis, because it's not so important for your body to have strong bones. It's more important to have good calcium levels in your blood. All right, so that's important to think about. What vitamin is necessary for the synthesis of clotting factors in the liver? Vitamin K. And you get vitamin K from green leafy vegetables. Like, what's your favorite green leafy vegetable? Broccoli. Everybody loves broccoli. Which is not true. Okay, but you should eat broccoli anyway. Okay. Let's see. I got one that we should delete from the list. We talked about it, but you don't have to know it. What enzyme limits the extent of clot formation? That was plasmin. And what form is the enzyme usually found in the blood? It's found as plasminogen. Plasminogen. Anytime you hear that ogen, it's inactive. But you don't have to know that for the test. That's not on the test. Plasmin. What form is the enzyme usually found in? What form? Yeah, ogen. Plasminogen. Plasminogen. That's an inactive form. But it's in your blood ready to go to work anytime. All right, now, number 12. What's the name of the process which produces a transfusion reaction? Is it coagulation? It's not coagulation, right? It is? Yeah, agglutination. Because agglutination is not fibrin formation, it is what? Antibody-antigen reaction. So we give it a different name. All right, a transfusion reaction is a result of an interaction between two kinds of molecules. What are they? Antigens and antibodies. Where are antibodies found? Antibodies are? Plasma. Antigens are in the? On the cell membrane of the red blood cell. Plasma membrane. All right. Two more questions. In the ABO blood group system, how many blood types are possible? Only in the ABO. Don't consider RH. I like four. You got A, B, AB, and O. So those are four. And let's see. How many blood types are... How is a person's blood type defined?
By the antigen.
By the antigen on the cell membrane. So if they have the A antigen, I don't have it on the board, they're type A. If they have both A and B, they're type AB.
And the blood cell?
Yeah, the antigen on the blood cell. Yeah. Now, where are antibodies? I always said we did that one already. Know the blood types of the ABO system and what antigens, antibodies are present and where they're located. Yeah, we did that. If they're blood type A, they got A antigens, and then they have anti-B in their plasma. And if they're blood type AB, those antigens are on the cell membrane, what kind of antibodies do they have? They can't have any, because that will cause agglutination. Okay. Name another blood group system.
Rh.
And how many blood types can it produce? That's right, only two. Positive if you got it, negative if you don't. It's just those two. All right, so that's blood. That's blood. You got a quiz on that on Thursday. I'm going to talk about the heart just a little bit. There's a handout for the heart, so you could read about the heart a little bit for Thursday. But I can't show any pictures, so I can't get too involved. But I could draw some stuff. So do you think your heart is important? Yeah, absolutely. So what is your heart doing your whole life? It's contracting, right? It's pumping blood. Can never take a break. So I'm just going to go over some stuff, just a couple things on the handout. So if I just draw on the board a heart very diagrammatically, this is kind of what the heart looks like. Just like that. What does that look like? It just looks like a triangle. And your heart is very triangular in nature. It's shaped triangularly. And when you look at a triangle, you have this pointy end over here. What do you call this pointy end of a triangle? I know it's an upside down triangle, but that's how your heart is in your body. This is what we call the apex. And this bottom part of a triangle, even though it's on the top of the heart, this is your base. Right there. So that's the apex and the base of your heart. And your heart is kind of interesting the way it's positioned in your body, because a lot of times when you think of the human body, if you got five fingers on the right side, what do you got on the left side? You got five. And if you get one arm on the right side, you get one arm on the left. So usually there's a lot of nice symmetry. You got one eyeball on one side of your face. What do you got on the other side of your face? Another eyeball. So usually there's this nice right-left symmetry in your body, but you don't find it everywhere you look, and the heart is probably the first example that we run into with that. Okay, so as you go from base to apex, the position of your heart changes, and you're probably aware of that. What side is your heart mostly on? It's mostly on the left side of your body, right? So as you go from base to apex, the orientation of the heart changes in two different directions. As you go from base to apex, it moves over to the left. Right? So that's why you got more heart on the left side of your body, because it goes from center line over to the left as you go down to the apex. But there's another angle, too, that your heart sits in or is oriented. As you go from base to apex, the heart also moves anteriorly. It starts pointing out of your body. So if I were to use my hand, your heart, as you go from base to apex, it moves to the left, but it also does what? It starts poking out of your body like that. So the apex is very superficial. Actually, when your heart beats, it pounds up against your chest wall. Boom, boom, boom. And if you're really thin, you can actually look at somebody's chest wall, and you can see that point where the heart is pounding up against. And we call that the point of maximal impulse, or the PMI. And it's easy to palpate, kind of underneath your pectoralis muscle. So that's a nice landmark. If you really want to find where somebody's heart is before you image them, or put on ECG electrodes or something, you can palpate and find that point of maximal impulse, because that apex is just pounding up against your chest wall, and you know exactly then where your heart is located, the PMI. All right, what else we got about the heart? Let me look at the list right here. The heart. Maybe there's not much else I can talk about without a diagram. So that was the biaxial tilt, the pericardium. Just a couple more things. I'm not going to talk about the pericardium today, but when I get the projector working again, all right, we'll go over that. Okay, chambers. Chambers and valves. The heart. Does anybody know how many chambers the heart has? It's got four. So let's just draw this on the board right here. I'll make the heart a little bit bigger. So here's the heart. It's got four chambers. Now this diagram is not going to look like the diagrams in your book. It's better than the ones in your book. Okay? First off, we can separate the heart. This is my heart. Like if I was standing here like this, you're looking at me. What hand is this? Okay? Except this is my right hand over here. This is my left hand. Okay? My left hand. So this is my heart that you're looking at. So this side over here is the left side of the heart, and this is the right side of the heart. So this is looking right on the anterior surface of the heart. So we get to break it up into right and left halves. Furthermore, we get to break the heart up into a superficial part and an inferior part. Superior and inferior. The superior parts are what we call atria. And the inferior parts we call ventricles. All right, so not only do we have right and left, we got atria and ventricles, so let's fill in the names for these particular chambers. This is the right atrium. And this is the RV, or right ventricle. And this is the left atrium, and this is the LV, left ventricle, right here, just like that. Okay. So how many chambers does the heart have? Four. Now the next question, you might not know, but it's just as easy. How many valves does the heart have? Four. Okay. So it's easy to remember. How many chambers does the heart have?
Four.
How many valves does the heart have?
Four.
Okay, you just have to know where they are, what the name is now, because now you know how many they got. Okay, all right, so, and blood goes from the left atrium into the left ventricle, or from the right atrium into the right ventricle, like that. And we don't want blood going backwards. We don't want blood going from the right ventricle back into the right atrium. We don't want blood going from the left ventricle back into the left atrium, because that's going to kill the heart. It's going to have to pump way too hard. That would be like if, in order to leave the room, if I had to walk up the stairs, but every time I walked up five stairs, I have to step back five stairs, how long would it take me to get out of the room? Well, forever, right? If I had to walk up five, then walk down five, right? And then walk up five, and then walk down five, I could never leave the room. All right, same thing. If the right atrium is pumping blood into the right ventricle, but all that blood goes back to the right atrium, what does the heart have to do? It's got to keep pumping and pumping and pumping, and what happens to the blood? It goes nowhere, right? So what prevents blood from going backwards into the right atrium? There is the valve there, right? So here's a valve, and it just looks like this, right here and right here. And there's a valve here and a valve right there. The valves between the atria and the ventricles are called atrioventricular valves. And I'm almost ready to stop, but not quite. I'm going to at least tell you the four valves. Okay? Okay. The one on the right side has got three cusps on it, three little leaflets that flop back and forth. All right, the one on the left side has only got two. So sometimes we call these leaflets or cusps. So this one here is the tricuspid valve because it's got three. This one over here is the bicuspid because it's only got two. Now, how on earth are you going to remember that three is on the right side and two is on the left side? Because as you look at it, as you read it, all right, you should always try before you buy as you read from left to right. I know, don't tell anybody I tell you all these stupid things, okay? But you can pass the test real easy with that. All right, try before you buy. But you should know why this is called the bicuspid, because it only has these two different things, two leaflets. This one's got three. Unfortunately, I only have two hands, so it's got one more flopping in there. Another name for the bicuspid is called the mitral. And I should have brought in a hat because a mitre is a hat that folds flat. But when you open it up, you can stick it on your head, and then you could pretend you're a bishop or a cardinal or the pope or something, right? That's called a mitre. So that kind of looks like that hat that these people wear. So it's called the mitral valve. Okay, so how many valves is that? It's only two. How many more do we have to talk about? Two more, okay? When the ventricles contract, they pump blood into, and this is not where they are in the heart, but I just draw them here because it's easy to do. Blood leaves the ventricles through these big blood vessels. This one here is called the aorta. Aorta. And this one here is called the pulmonary artery. Pulmonary artery. And once you pump blood into an artery, like the pulmonary artery or the aorta, you don't want it going back. Right, because if it went back, then blood would never leave the heart, and if it never left the heart, well, then you'd die, right? Because the heart needs to pump. So there are a couple other valves here and here. These are not atrioventricular, because atrioventricular is up over here. These are what we call semilunar valves. Semilunar valves. And then the name of this one is the aortic semilunar valve, and this is the pulmonary semilunar valve. And the semilunar valves are very similar in shape, just like the atrioventricular valves are very similar in shape, but the atrioventricular are a lot different than the semilunar, and I'll have to show you some pictures of that. Okay, so how many chambers does the heart have? How many valves does the heart have? And you got to know the names. The two atrioventricular and the two semilunar, namely the tricuspid, the bicuspid atrioventricular, the aortic semilunar, and the pulmonary semilunar. Okay? All right, I think that's about all I can talk today. So, fantastic. I'll pass back some tests now if you want to stick around, quizzes, whatever.